Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. None of my co-hosts are here today. However, I am joined by Full Press Coverage Browns Managing Editor, Nick Swanson. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Kyle. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty fantastic. The playoffs are here, I know, for the Packers. First round bye, so no need to worry about wild card weekend. But we are still going to preview the games, just not the Packers game. However, it's, you know, big news in general for the NFL, but certainly specifically for the Browns. Browns finally made the playoffs, first time since 2002. So I'm sure you're pretty ecstatic about that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm a youngin, so I was only 1 year old whenever the Browns last made the playoffs. But it's been a long 15 plus years of following them, and you should have seen my reaction whenever Mason Rudolph overthrew that 2-point conversion. I went nuts.
Yeah, they certainly made it dramatic, that's for sure.
Yeah, to say the least.
Now, I guess news for this week basically all centers around the Browns wild card weekend game, and hey, look at that, they're playing the Steelers again. Imagine that. Meet in week 17, meet them in wild card round, this time in Pittsburgh. But there's gonna be quite a few players and now coaches that aren't going to be making this trip.
Yeah, and I didn't have very high expectations going into this game, but especially with the recent news that broke, pretty much the entire Browns coaching staff has COVID. Stefanski, Drew Petzing, Jeff Howard, Chad O'Shea, Bill Callahan, along with a whole bunch of players. It's going to be a very ugly game.
Yeah, and I mean, even on the Steelers side, I believe there's a few players that won't be playing, like TJ Watt is inactive. The Steelers will have their own issues on their side of the football.
Yes, and I know they'll also be without Joe Hayden still, former Brown Joe Hayden. I think Ben Roethlisberger is supposed to come back for next week's game. So that is something that the Browns are going to have to game plan around. But missing players like Denzel Ward, Joel Bitonio, Kevin Johnson, players like that, those are really going to hurt you. Kadarrell Hodge as well. This is going to be a really challenging week for the Browns.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess before we go anywhere else, for those who don't know, going through what the standings are, what the matchups are for the, you know, for the AFC and NFC playoffs, really. So starting in the AFC, the Chiefs are the number one seed, 14-12 record. Right behind them, the Bills, the second seed at 13-3. Most years, that would mean a first round bye. Of course, with seven teams per conference in the playoffs, the Bills are forced to play on wildcard weekend. The Steelers, third place at 12-4. And then the group of 11-5, the Titans are 11-5, the Ravens 11-5, the Browns 11-5, and the Colts finally. So what does that mean? Well, it sets up for these matchups. So we've got the Indianapolis Colts visiting the Buffalo Bills, as mentioned, the Cleveland Browns traveling to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then the Baltimore Ravens will be taking on the Tennessee Titans, a rematch from last year. Huh, imagine that. NFC side real quick, as mentioned, we mentioned it last episode, this gonna mention it here, Packers first round bye, number one seed in the NFC, 13-3. The Saints right behind, 12-4 in the second seed. The Seahawks 12-4 in the third seed. Washington's at 7-9, the fourth seed. Tampa Buccaneers, fifth seed at 11-5. The Los Angeles Rams at 10-6 in the sixth seed, and the Bears trailing things off at 8-8 to make the playoffs. So, in that case, the Bears traveling to New Orleans take on the Saints. The Rams and Seahawks, there's, you know, divisional 3-6 divisional matchup in the AFC, 3-6 divisional matchup in the NFC. Kind of funny how that works. And then finally, Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on Washington. So yeah, so go through these games. The first game that's happening chronologically is the Bills and Colts. That's that first game on Saturday. Bills are our favorites right now. I believe last time I checked, it was 6.5 point favorites. So pretty sure they had the first playoff game hosting as well last time against the Texans last year, and that didn't go so well. So they're obviously going to be looking to not necessarily avenge against the Colts, but avenge against an AFC South team and exercise those demons of that playoff loss from last year.
Yes, I remember watching that Bills-Texans game. I was actually at work and we had it on the TV. And I don't know if you remember, but I believe it was the opening kickoff of the second half that was returned for a touchdown by the Bills that got called back. That totally changed the game and just sent the Bills in a downward spiral. I don't think anything like that happens this year. The Bills are a better team than they were last year. I think the Bills are actually the only team in the AFC that can genuinely stand up to the Chiefs.
I think unequivocally they've got the better quarterback in this game. The way Josh Allen has really improved as a passer this year, maybe that's not so coincidental considering the investment they made in Stephon Diggs, but that combination has worked so well. And it's made, you know, last year it seemed like they were almost afraid. Once they got up big, they just wanted to run the football and they were afraid to trust Josh Allen. And then suddenly the Texans caught back up, and when it was time to kind of trust Allen again, it seems like he may have had his confidence shaken too a little bit, worried about that, the comeback. I feel as though his decision making as a quarterback will allow him to just not feel as much pressure. And maybe he does crumble under the pressure, but as long as that's not too much for him, I think he can manage to play better in this game and not make so many mistakes as well when his number is called. Tough defense though, gotta say.
Yeah, this is definitely gonna be a low scoring game, I think, because both of these defenses are very, very good. And the offenses have shown times where they can be stagnant or they can just explode. Like we saw, especially Buffalo this past week against the Dolphins, put up 56 and just handle a very good defensive team. So I think it'll be a tale of two defenses, which one will outperform the other.
There are certain respects where the Colts offense, the offensive line is really good, although if you look at Football Outsiders, some of their metrics, the run blocking has not been so favorable for the Colts this year. I mean, as a pass protection unit, they're up there in the rankings. They're ranked seventh in Football Outsiders adjusted sack rate. Pretty good, right? I mean, not quite top five, but certainly a top 10 unit, but they're 20th in their adjusted line yards, which is their run blocking metric, kind of independent of running back productions. How's the Lions blocking? And yeah, they have them at 27th. Or 20th. The Texans are 27th. Again, not to confuse with the AFC South teams here, but that's quite a disappointing rank for the Colts, considering the talent they have and the expectations they had coming into this year. But in spite of that rank, Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines, especially from a running back perspective, have produced really well. And some of that is, you know, involvement in the passing game as well as on the ground. But I think those two players are going to be really key for the Colts in this game. Because the Bills right now are the big bad offense. It's not Phillip Rivers, the quarterback you're worried about. It's Josh Allen. So if you're the Colts, you probably want to have a good effective run game that'll be able to hold possession and keep the ball away from the Bills as much as possible and rely on your good defense. I don't want to sound all old school and, oh, establish the run and you know, it's the adapt to the 21st century. But this is probably the strength of where the Colts game lies, is the run game and the defense. So rely on that and make that a weapon is probably their best hope, I think.
Yeah, I think that'll be the key for the Colts offense. It's getting that run game going, because Phillip Rivers can only do so much. He's getting up there in age. I think that especially in this game in particular, they're going to focus more on the run, just because if you can get through that defensive line, then you're gone. The corners aren't going to catch up to you. Trey White, maybe, but safeties I haven't been impressed with so far this year with the Bills. I think that if the running backs can get into the second unit of that Bills defense, then the Colts are just going to slowly tear them apart.
You predicted more low scoring, although Vegas isn't quite on that same side. They have it right now as an over under 51, which is the second highest among all the wildcard games. So they are thinking maybe more towards a high scoring game, which to me favors the Bills for sure. I think the Colts really want to keep this low, keep this score down for them to have a better chance. If it gets into, you know, a shootout where both teams are expected to score 30 points, I don't know that the Colts are going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, that I 100% agree with you on that. This Colts team is not built for shootouts like this Bills team is. So I think that if the Colts want to stand a chance, they need to keep this a very low scoring game.
So we said that's the second highest over under right now. The highest is actually the Ravens Titans. To me, that does make sense. Two offenses that have been performing really well throughout the season, certainly for the Ravens last month, they've really got their groove back. I know, you know, Lamar Jackson tested positive for COVID and that sort of interruption mid-season. Now he's back. He's looked good. And I mean, for him, a quarterback that does rely on his legs as much as he does, you'd be really worried about the effects of COVID that would have on him. Mark Andrews, who has type 1 diabetes as well, someone who also tested positive. And so far, both have looked fine since coming back. So if these Vegas lines kind of, you know, respect that and are kind of saying they expect not only the Ravens to thrive, but they actually have the Ravens as road underdogs or as road favorites, sorry, in this game. 3-point favorites right now against the Titans, which frankly I was a little surprised about. Titans did beat the Ravens earlier this year, even with their pretty awful defense. You know, everyone's going to talk back to the probably last year's playoff loss that the Ravens had at the hand of the Titans in the divisional round. Now, I think the Titans defense last year was one of the elite units of the league, in top five, maybe even top three unit in the league defensively. They're probably closer to bottom five, bottom three this year. So does that give the Ravens the edge? I know the Vegas odds makers certainly are saying that. I'm, again, though, because we saw this Titans team beat this Ravens team, it was overtime, so it was really close earlier this year, though. I'm still thinking the Titans, I would still pick the Titans to win if I had to choose between these two. So how are you viewing this game, Nick?
You know, I'm not sure how to feel about this game, because on the one chance you have Lamar Jackson in the playoffs, which granted we don't have a huge sample size from him, but it has not turned out well in either of the games that he has played. But like you said, this Tennessee defense is nothing like they were last year. And I think that'll be the key. I think the Ravens offense will be able to remember and think back on that loss to the Titans earlier in the season. They'll come into the game with a chip on their shoulder. Lamar will be out there trying to prove that he is a winner and can win in the playoffs. And I think Baltimore will get out early, and I don't think they'll be looking back.
Because one thing that I've been hearing a few podcasts listening to, the idea that, are the Ravens more dangerous this year because they're coming in as underdogs as opposed to last year where everyone was almost already crowning them all the success, the first round bye, and kind of almost buying into, okay, we got the unanimous MVP and maybe buying into their own hype a little too much? Is it better for them to be the underdogs?
I think so, because I think last year, seeing as how they had the MVP, they were winning a whole bunch of games, I think that kind of set on them in the playoffs, and they went into the game thinking, oh, everyone expects us to win this game, this should be no problem, and then they just got punched in the mouth. I think that this year they're mad, they feel they should have won the division, they feel Pittsburgh isn't a real threat to them. And I think that they will come out strong, and Baltimore's offense will look the best we've seen this year.
One thing that they did this year, it's not that in the Titans game, it's in another AFC South game, the Colts game. Imagine we're talking about them again. But the Ravens were down early against the Colts. I believe it was 10-0. And then they were able to come back against a really good defense. Again, maybe this year the Colts are a top five unit. It seemed like it anyway. A lot of the numbers kind of showcase that. And so that, I think that game, maybe more than anything, can instill the confidence in the Ravens that they are capable of making a comeback. Because up to that point, I don't think Lamar Jackson had ever come back from a double-digit deficit at any point in his career. It was one of those things where the Ravens were such a good team, and they could run their style because they were always winning. But as soon as they, you know, in the playoff game last year, as soon as they fell behind against the Titans, it seemed like the whole team's confidence and Lamar's confidence himself kind of just shrunk, and they just kept making mistakes and compounding that altogether, and the offense just really never got going. Now I think they can draw off that experience, and they're not going to panic if they do fall behind against the Titans. Now, if you know, you said, Dick, you expect the Ravens will win because they'll be up early. I do think this Titans team has also shown that comeback ability. It's not, you know, you think, oh, Derrick Henry, this is a team for the Titans. They have to be in the lead all the time, too. But Ryan Tannehill has played some incredible football these last two seasons. It's been really quite amazing. Maybe underrated in terms of the appreciation from around the NFL. But, I mean, I think he's been a top 10 quarterback these last 2 years. And I think that the Titans, he's really had to make up for how bad that defense has been. So I think that is what could sink them. But I still think you can make the argument the Titans offense was the only offense this year that never took a week off. No matter what, they were always putting up points. If you stopped Henry, then Tannehill was going to beat you through the air. If Tannehill was struggling, then Henry would run through you, loosen things up. It seems like even the Chiefs this year, there was a stretch where teams were playing these heavy zone concepts and not really rushing and just trying to clog the middle of the field. And it kind of gave them they had to adjust to that. It took them a couple weeks to kind of work through that where they weren't playing optimal. But I feel like the Titans, like even the Packers, I think to the Buccaneers game, not that, sorry Packers fans are listening, don't really want to repeat that, but that game was just awful. Like every team's kind of had that game, no matter how good their offense has been. I mean, the Bills, they went through a stretch where Allen wasn't playing so sharp, but I feel like the Titans offense this year just has never stopped.
Yeah, that's what I will take responsibility. I was one of the people that was very low on Tannehill this year until I actually looked and like watched film on him. Like I'd watched pretty much every Titans game, but it didn't really stand out to me until after the season when I realized how good Tannehill actually was this year. Like he had 33 touchdowns to only 7 interceptions. Whenever Derrick Henry was having an off day, then, like you said, he would get it done through the air, and he had those great games. This offense is multidimensional, which is exactly what you want in an offense. You don't want to be one-sided. You don't want to be kind of like what the Titans were last year in the playoffs, where they just had to rely on Derrick Henry every single play. I think the jump that Tannehill took from last year to this year has the Titans as legitimate contenders this year.
And not that this is a fantasy show, but I think if anyone's playing fantasy football slates or any DFS slates, like to me, this is the game you want to invest heavily in. I know the Vegas over-unders have it. They have 55. The Bills Colts are the only one that's above 50. It's the only one that's above 47.5, actually. So they have this game kind of head and shoulders above everything else. And I do believe, again, with how poor the Titans defense is, that it really is going to hold true. And the Ravens are a good offense. It's just, again, no one's been able to stop the Titans this year. So I don't know if the Ravens are suddenly the team to just magically do that all of a sudden, especially when the Titans are, you know, it's a playoff game. They know it's a playoff game as much as, you know, the Ravens are going in with a lot of, oh, we want to avenge from last year. The Titans didn't get the job done last year. They're still hungry for a Super Bowl, and it starts wild card for them. You're probably hoping the Browns at least next year can be saying, oh yeah, playoffs 2 years in a row. But for now, they're in the 2020 playoffs. It's 2021 now, but it's still the 2020 season. So immense success for the Browns. But yeah, without Kevin Stefanski, I mean, first off, I guess at this point, it's probably up in the air who's even coaching it at this point. Has there been any talk of who might even be available to be able to coach?
I've heard it was like the assistant linebackers coach or whoever was going to be the like interim head coach for the game. Apparently, Stefanski's still going to be calling plays, though. He's going to be like zoomed into the game or Skyped in or whatever. He's going to be there virtually, basically on an iPad, telling everyone what to do. So not sure how that'll turn out. I'm pretty sure that's a playoff first, that we're going to have a coach that's coaching from a tablet. But I don't know how it'll translate to the actual game, because I think this will show how much Stefanski really means to this team, just having his presence there. So I think that'll be interesting to watch and see.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be certainly watching and seeing. And I mean, again, hopefully that there's no communication issues that kind of prevent, you know, things from happening. Because that would be quite unfortunate that he go through all this effort. So, yeah, I think, okay, so coaching wise, it's, you're probably not installing very much new tactics anyway going into wild card week. I think the Browns know what has worked for them this year. They've gone through that quite a bit. I think, I guess it's also concerns with who's going to be playing on the field. I know, I think, is it both of their starting tackles I see Jack Conklin on the injury report, as well as Miles Garrett. So there's a, you know, Conklin limited, injury participant. So we'll see if that means he'll eventually be, you know, get better as the week goes on, or if he's going to be out. But I don't know if you've heard anything about Conklin specifically.
Specifically from Conklin, no. I know that Jedrick Wills is expected to play, even though he did have his little run-in with the law this past weekend. I know that I haven't heard anything about, like I said, Conklin specifically. There might be a chance he plays. There's also a chance that this game gets postponed. I've heard that there have been talks by the Browns organization to move the game to like Tuesday night, like we've seen during the regular season. I'm not sure if that is specifically just to get everybody back, because I know that Denzel Ward would be eligible to return Monday, because Sunday would be the final day of his 10-day quarantine. So I don't know if it's just to get the players back, or also maybe if the organization isn't confident in the team winning the game, then it might be to try and screw up the Steelers' chances as well. Try and, if I'm going to go down, you're going down with me type deal. But I'm hoping that we see Jack Conklin out there, because the team needs him. He was a very big part of this team coming into the season, and they were really relying on him to protect Baker Mayfield along with Jedrick Wills and Joel Bitonio, who Joel Bitonio is going to be out, which is unfortunate because he's the longest tenured Brown and he's going to miss their first playoff appearance in 18 years. But right now, Conklin's status is really up in the air. I think they're going to take it day by day and then just hope that he can be back in time.
Yeah, so, I mean, we tend to record a lot of these episodes Wednesday night, so we do have to do some guessing injury reports week to week anyway, so nothing new here. It's to stay focused, and you know, I think most teams have a next-man-up mentality. I mean, the Browns have had, you know, very recently a lot of bouts with COVID. The one game where their entire receiver corps was wiped out, basically. So, yeah, it's really is nothing new for the Browns. But up to this point, it seems like this game is going to go for, this is Sunday night. This is the last game. Obviously, not time enough for certain individuals to get back. So, again, we'll have to see if there is movement. Although, I guess everything this year is unprecedented anyway, but that would be quite unprecedented, a playoff game on a Tuesday. I mean, I guess a regular season game on a Tuesday is pretty strange. But that, I mean, does put both those teams at a disadvantage the following week, whoever gets through, only one of them will, in going into that matchup against, I guess it depends who wins, who the matchup is against. So I think, that'll be interesting to see. So from regardless of who's there, who's not, is the Browns strategy going to change at all? Or are they going to employ a very run-heavy strategy regardless of what's happening this week?
I think that due to Kevin Stefanski not being there, I think we're going to see a very similar approach that we saw last week. last week's was very kind of, it was actually pretty mixed. You saw some success through the air, especially with Baker towards the beginning of the game. He was getting in a rhythm early, coming out strong in the second half. But I think they're going to try and keep the run game going, try to get Kareem Hunt more involved. Nick Chubb had 14 carries for 108 yards and a touchdown. Kareem Hunt, 10 for 37. So I think what they're going to be trying to do is get Kareem Hunt more opportunities in the pass game as well, just so that way he has a chance to blow the defense wide open and just try and get something going.
So how do you think Baker Mayfield is going to be feeling going into his first playoff game? Do you think it'll be similar to maybe like Josh Allen's playoff preview last year? Or do you think Baker's more prepared to handle that type of situation?
I can't say for sure, but I think that Baker is more prepared than Josh Allen was, because going into this game, they're underdogs, and Baker Mayfield was a college football walk-on who ended up winning the Heisman and getting drafted first overall. So he's got that underdog mindset. So I think that gives him an advantage, because he's been working with this his whole football career, basically. So I think that he shouldn't have too many nerves or anything. I think he's going to go in with a chip on his shoulder. Everyone doubting him this year, everyone saying that the Browns shouldn't have made it, especially against the Steelers, who played their backups last week because of COVID. Trying to prove that last week's win wasn't a fluke and that he is, in fact, the future of this team and that the Cleveland Browns are legit.
Which quarterback do you have more faith in this week, knowing that, okay, Ben did great at the start of the year, but it seems as the year went on, maybe, you know, maybe that arm getting a little tired coming off the major injury last year. Which quarterback do you have more faith in right now?
I have more faith in Baker Mayfield, not just because of Ben's play, but he's up there in age, coming off of COVID. I don't know if he'll be all there whenever he comes back. Baker Mayfield has faced this adversity before. He's been down weapons before. We saw against that Jets game, or against that Jets team. Unfortunately, that game didn't go the way that Cleveland would have hoped. But I would take Baker Mayfield just because I feel like he is better prepared both physically and mentally for this game.
I know the Vegas line around this game for the spread has shifted quite a bit, I think, in wake of the news of Stefanski not being available to be at the game itself. Although, again, you're telling us the news that he's going to still participate, he's still going to call plays, and hopefully that all operates as well. I believe earlier in the week, at one point, it was the Steelers were only favored by 3.5, and now they're up to 6, with the potential that could continue to increase. So, obviously, full press coverage, Browns managing editor. I know what you want to happen. Do you think the Browns can win this game?
I released a podcast earlier this week talking about this. I think they stand a chance, as long as they don't beat themselves. Because I think that's the biggest thing. I think that this Cleveland team should be more worried about them beating themselves than Pittsburgh beating them. Because this is a very young team, obviously a very inexperienced team when it comes to the playoffs. I think this game will either be a one-score game or it'll be Steelers by 20. I honestly don't think there's anything in between. I'm leaning towards the Steelers by 20. Just because you won't have Stefanski there in person. You don't have your number one corner. Your number two corner looked bad last week. You lost your number two edge rusher in Olivier Vernon, who tore his Achilles. you're down to Carl Nassib starting in a playoff game for you. I'm going to go with the Steelers, and I think the Steelers will end up getting it done pretty handily.
From the Steelers' offensive perspective, again, the lack of faith in Ben, does that mean they should also employ a more run-heavy approach, or do you think, you know, in spite of Ben and his limitations, he should still be airing it out to those weapons and letting them, after the catch, or letting them produce, specifically Juju, Claypool, and Deontay Johnson?
I think that they have a better chance of beating the Browns through the air, even though I'm not completely sold on Ben. This Browns defensive line is very good. You've got, obviously, Myles Garrett, who's a potential defensive player of the year player this year. You've got Larry Ogunjobi, Sheldon Richardson, Jordan Elliott, those guys in the middle. All very good run stoppers and pass rushers as well. So I think it'll be more of a short passing game. I don't think you'll see Ben taking shots deep downfield. And if he does, it'll be very few and far in between. I think it all depends on if Deontay Johnson can beat whether it's Sheldrick Redwine or whoever's lining up across from him, Terrence Mitchell. I do think it'll be a limited passing offense, and I don't think James Conner, Benny Snell, or Anthony McFarland will be able to do much against this Browns defensive line. So I do think they'll be more pass heavy. I just don't think it'll be launching it downfield once a drive.
And speaking of the trenches, back to Football Outsiders and their offensive line metrics, they have the Steelers ranked 32nd, so last in the league in adjusted line yards. So at 3.78 yards is the yards created for, or potential of creation for running backs. That's, again, lowest in the league. They're the worst. They're number one in adjusted sack rate. It's the strange dichotomy of Football Outsiders ranks this team as the worst run blocking unit, but the best pass protecting unit. I do wonder if part of that adjusted sack rate is how quickly Ben's been throwing the ball out. Teams have just not been able to get after him. So sometimes in that case, a quarterback can kind of make an offensive line, but really on the ground, it's the offensive line making that running back, and they just have not been able to create space at all this year. So I think just on how the Steelers are performing, they're probably better off in any game going pass heavy, but certainly against the Browns, that it seems that's the strength of it, is that run defense. That really, they are better served to be airing this out. It's funny, we talk about the underdogs needing to run the football so much and the favorites needing to pass so much when normally it's the opposite. But the AFC North is always wild and weird, so why would we expect anything different in this game?
Yeah, exactly.
We know the NFC North. I guess this year it was fairly normal. We expected the Packers to win it, and they did. The Bears still made the playoffs, though, and they end up matched up against the Saints here in Wild Card Weekend. And for myself, I think back to last year's Saints game. It's funny. Ravens, Titans, some revenge. Maybe almost the Bills might exercise demons against a team that's a division rival of the team that beat them in the playoffs last year. It's almost the same for the Saints, right? They're going up against another NFC North team, again, the Wild North, on the NFC side here. Because last year, the Vikings really controlled the line of scrimmage, especially defensively, I found. Danelle Hunter, one of the best games of his career, and that's saying a lot because he's had a lot of good games. And I believe it was Everson Griffin. Like the two as a duo, the Saints had no answer for, it seemed. The offensive line just couldn't identify them when they overloaded sides. They just put themselves in situations where things really weren't working well. And Drew Brees struggled in that game quite a lot, actually. So I see a similar path to where Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks can create a lot of disruption and really hold back the Saints offense. Just in that regard, what do you think? Do you think this Bears defense is capable of stopping this high-powered Saints offense?
I think that there is a chance. Drew Brees has looked like a shell of his former self this season. And I think it'll come down to, well, this seems dumb to say, but how will the quarterback do? But we haven't seen him necessarily hurt them in games yet. But this is a Bears team that felt like they should have been a lot better than they were. They back in the playoffs, they're hungry. I think this Bears team will be able to get pressure on Drew Brees. And I know Michael Thomas returned to practice recently for the Saints. That might be big for them. I think that if he does return, then the Saints win this game easily. I do think the Saints win this game because I'm not confident at all in the Chicago Bears as a whole. But this should definitely be an interesting game to watch. This is also the game that's going to be broadcast on Nickelodeon, which I found very funny.
Influencing the kids. Teaching the kids how bad Drew Brees is. That's maybe a good thing, actually. Educate them. Because, I mean, you say shell of his former self. I'll agree if that former self is from 2015. Because to be honest, this has been Drew Brees the last 4 or 5 years, where he just tails off at the end of the year. Just seems like the arm strength just can't withstand full seasons. We've seen his touchdown numbers just tail off at the end of every season, basically. I think the only year where it didn't was 2017. I think it was Kamara's rookie year where he and Mark Ingram just ran the football so much. Brees had the fewest attempts by far in, I think, his time with the Saints. And because he wasn't being over-pushed, he kind of was able to maintain and play decent football at the end of the season. But really, this has been Drew Brees the last few years. And I mean, last year he was out-dueled by Kirk Cousins. I would say Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than Mitch Trubisky. So I agree with, and I'll agree with you that I do think the Saints win this. But I mean, Vegas has this as a 10-point spread. It's the largest of any of them, any of the games this week. I find that one hard to believe. Like, if I was picking really any line at all on this, outside of maybe picking the Titans, because if I think the underdog is going to win, I usually think that's my favorite to go with. But I like these Bears. The Saints as 10-point favorites. I don't think they're going to cover that. I think the Bears can kind of hold this to where maybe the Saints need a field goal at the end of regulation just to get the win. Like, I think this is going to be a struggle for them. And if Mitch Trubisky doesn't mess up, the Bears could win this game. I count on Mitch Trubisky making mistakes every game. I think about, like, last week against the Packers, I thought he was making a lot of really good plays. He tends to love to just throw it to Robinson no matter what, and he was doing really good actually trying to find the open receivers, not testing it too much with Jaire Alexander. And then, you know, comes to it, they're close to the goal line, and he throws a pass in the end zone that's behind Robinson on his crossing out route, and it's well short of Mooney on his fade route. It's, again, I joked on this in the last Packers episode, it's as if he wanted to throw it to both of them, so he just threw it in the middle and Kevin King almost intercepted it. It was so awful. How you see passes like that, it's like, how can this guy have a starting job as a quarterback? But those moments really didn't come out much last week. So if Trubisky can minimize it, you'd like, as a Bears coach or a Bears fan, you'd like it to be zero. But if you can hold it just one or two mistakes and not make anything too critical, I think there is an outside chance the Bears could win this game.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I do think that this game will all depend on which Bears defense we see, because we've seen them have good games this year and we've seen them just totally fall off the face of the earth. And I think that specifically Buster Skrine, how he plays will determine the result of this game. He's been okay, to say the least, throughout this year. To say the most, he's been okay. He's been very bad at some times, and he's been pretty okay at other times. So I think if he finally has his good game of the year, then I think that the Bears defense will be able to pull this out for them.
So moving on to the next game, we've got the Rams visiting the Seahawks. So two divisional opponents. They split the season series. So interesting to see. I think the Browns and Steelers also split the season series, right?
Yes.
So funny how those 3-6 games, division teams that are trying to get the rubber match. And it's the playoff match, so of course you want to win that. The truth with this game, though, I think it's really tough to preview because we don't know who the Rams quarterback's going to be. Is it Jared Goff? And, I mean, even if it is Jared Goff, what kind of state is he in? He just had surgery on his thumb, I believe. Throwing hand thumb, so, you know, kind of important for a quarterback. So you've got John Walford, who did win the game last week, who may be having to start this playoff game for the Rams. What do you think of this game, Nick? Because all I'm thinking of is defense in this game.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that. Seattle's defense has played better than I think anybody expected, because Seattle has been known ever since the Legion of Boom, ever since that era ended, that Seattle has had a very poor defense, and they've really managed to step it up the last couple weeks. Russell Wilson, however, seems to have slowed down. Very strong start to the season, but again, the last couple weeks he's kind of fallen off. I think that the Seahawks win this game because you'll either have a quarterback with a broken finger playing, or you'll have a dude making his second career NFL start. So I think Seattle has this game in the bag.
I think Carlos Dunlap, to me, that the acquisition midseason, I think, really turned this defense around for the Seahawks. It got the pass rush going, and when you can get a pass rush going, it helps the coverage. So I think he's going to be key in this, just like Aaron Donald will be key, and those two, I can't say edge rusher with Donald because he's coming from the middle, but those two pass rushers, you know, are going to force these quarterbacks to, and I mean, I guess Goff can be mobile in a sense, not that he's known to, but certainly Walford, that's his game, right? So it's going to be maybe these quarterbacks' escapability from the pocket will be key in this game. I know Wilson seems to do it every game. One thing that's kind of been apparent, though, in these two meetings is Jalen Ramsey has really not only embraced the task of covering Metcalf, but has really excelled in the role. I looked at it. It was combined 7. In the two games, Metcalf has combined 7 receptions for, like, I think it's 70 yards or something. Like, no touchdowns. Like, it's really, that's what Metcalf, if Metcalf does that in one game, we're almost disappointed, yet let alone two games combined. So I think that aspect is really key. If Metcalf in this third game can kind of elevate and produce against Ramsey, and Wilson starts targeting that area more, I think it forces the Rams defense. Because right now, I think how they're playing it, okay, we'll let Ramsey on Metcalf, and the safeties will all flow towards the other players. We'll trust that one-on-one matchup there. We can kind of focus in on everyone else. It's kind of what the Legion of Boom used to do, right? Sherman would just lock down so much that teams would avoid him, and then the rest of the secondary can just focus on one side. So I kind of get that sense of, that's what's been holding back the Seahawks. So it's really going to come down to Metcalf-Ramsey. That's going to be an incredible matchup to watch, just as an individual standpoint of view.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the highlight of this game, getting to see them go at it for the full 60 minutes.
All right, we knew an NFC team had to make the playoffs. We've known it the entire season. Even when, I don't know, I think, was it week 6? None of them had wins? No, okay, I'm kidding. It's not that bad. But
it felt like that long.
It really did. And I mean, Washington prevailed 7-9, which, I mean, to be fair, it's not the first 7-9 team to make the playoffs. So let's take it as may. And the last 2 7-win teams in the playoffs have also won those playoff games in those wild card weekends. The Panthers a couple years ago did it against an absolutely atrocious Cardinals team that was down to, I think, 3rd or 4th string quarterback. So that one, you kind of understand why. And then you had the Beastquake, and we were yet just figuring out who Marshawn Lynch really was the time before. I don't think that repeats this time. Not against the greatest quarterback of all time. I guess it depends on who's healthy, but that defense has been incredibly imposing at times throughout the year. It's been really inconsistent. I guess so offensively, they've also been inconsistent. But certainly offensively, it seems like they've really put it together the last few weeks, and as expected, it was going to take time. New receivers, new system. Now they're bought in. I know of one way that Washington could maybe stop Tampa. But before I get to that, Nick, what do you think of this game?
You know, this is the game. This is probably the second most intriguing game, in my opinion, because I really do think that Washington has a chance. Their front four is incredible. Their linebackers have played well. Their corners and safeties outside of Cameron Curl really haven't been spectacular. But this defense is good. I think Alex Smith could be able to game manage his way to a win with Terry McLaurin being back. I really am high on Steven Sims. I think he's great and just underutilized. And also, the Buccaneers are going to be without Mike Evans. So I don't know how that will affect Tom Brady. Obviously, he has a great connection with Antonio Brown, who will probably step up and be the number one receiver in this game. Chris Godwin has underperformed this year, but he was also injured for most of it, so that's nothing surprising. But I think that the Washington football team actually has a legitimate chance of winning this game.
And you named what I was thinking right off the bat, the front four. Specifically those edge rushers. You got Chase Young, which is 2 years in a row, the second overall pick has come in as an edge rusher and just totally transformed their respective team's defense. It was Nick Bosa 2 years ago with the 49ers, brought them to a Super Bowl. Obviously, Washington fans are hoping Chase Young has that same impact. And I mean, that's been the only way to stop Brady throughout his career. If you can get four-man pass rushes at him. It's funny because the Buccaneers, maybe similar to the Steelers, they're top three in adjusted sack rate. Although the Buccaneers are also ninth in adjusted line yards. So they've been much better run blocking units and maybe overall better offensive line unit. But their adjusted sack rate numbers have just, that their ranking has skyrocketed this year with Brady. And I do wonder if part of that is how quickly he can throw it out. Whereas you had Jameis Winston before making a lot of mistakes, holding on the ball too much, kind of maybe that ranking lowered partially because of quarterback play. And it's such a mass difference in 1 year. And I mean, yes, they brought in Tristan Wirfs as a rookie, but I don't think that just a rookie tackle is suddenly making this entire unit like that. I do think that is partially quarterback play. But that being said, this, you know, tough test for the rookie, regardless of if he's against Chase Young or Montez Sweat, I think Wirfs is gonna have a challenge, and that is really the key to Washington. I suppose if there's enough injuries, maybe Washington scores against Tampa, but that's where I'm less concerned. Alex Smith this year, it's been amazing to see the comeback that he's made physically to be able to come back and even just step on the field. But I don't know that he's necessarily been an elevator difference maker for this team where it's truly showing that I used to be a first overall pick. I don't know that that's there. Although, again, Packers fans would argue he shouldn't have been the first overall pick that year. But I think we all know that now. That's my only concern is how does Washington score against Tampa if they've got all their players back and healthy? Think of Washington's pass rush is deadly, but so too could the same thing could be said for the Buccaneers. So when I saw that the Saints were the heaviest favorite, my initial thought is how are they heavier favorites than the Bucs? I know they're at home, but in this year, does home field advantage really mean that much outside of maybe environmental issues? The Bears, they at least had a .500 record. It's not a losing season like Washington. To be going up against that opponent, I thought the Saints shouldn't be as heavy favorite as the Bucks are against Washington.
I think Chicago has a more complete defense as a whole than Washington does. I think outside of Khalil Mack, Washington has a better pass rush because obviously you saw the addition of Robert Quinn to that defense. He really hasn't been anything spectacular. I do think, however, that Tampa Bay is more will probably put up more points than New Orleans will just because they are a better offense, in my opinion. So I do think that the Tampa spread should be more than it is, but I'm not surprised that it's not the highest.
All right. So I think we previewed all six games pretty well. Yeah, six games on wild card weekend, right? Isn't that wild? And the Browns are playing on wild card weekend. That's probably the most wild of all. But Nick, why don't you let the people know where they can find and follow you? Because I know I certainly appreciate you coming on. I'm sure our listeners do too.
Oh, yeah. And thank you very much for having me. You can follow me at FPC_Browns. We post, obviously, Browns-related content. We tweet out articles as well as our podcast, which is the FPC Browns podcast, which is available on all streaming platforms. And for more general sports content, you can follow at NSwansonMedia. And that's pretty much all I have to plug, yeah.
All right, yeah, so keep looking for everything full press coverage in general. I mean, we've been hammering out content this week, in favor of these playoff matchups. I know Jesse Hall, here for one of my co-hosts, he went and he just wrote an article looking at every team's most important non-quarterback for each team in the NFC. Braden Halchek also did one for the AFC, so you can check out those articles. And we're just going to, the whole team is going to just keep pumping out all this great stuff, whether it's written content, podcasts, and of course catch everything on the Full Press Radio Network. And you know where you can get all that stuff together? It's on the Full Press Coverage app. You can download that for free on Android and iOS stores, and yeah, with that you never miss anything Full Press Coverage. You can also follow us here at the Full Press Coverage Packers Pod on Twitter at FPC_Packers. I'm at Senra Says. Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212. Sam Toma's at S_Toma97. 1212 97. Rogers, Kenny Clark. We love those players. We're not seeing them this week, but we will be back to preview the Packers' potential opponent. Actually, I guess we were gonna. That was the one thing I forgot to talk about, is who the Packers could end up playing. So the way that the standings work, as the number one seed, the Packers will always play the lower seed, which means, you know, there's going to be four teams at least, so they can't play the two highest seeds. It's impossible. So the Packers will not play either the Seahawks or the Saints on divisional weekend. If they are to meet either of those teams in the playoffs, it'll be in the NFC Championship game. So Packers potential opponents, so starts from the Buccaneers. Or it could be Washington, if Washington doesn't beat the Bucs. It's funny how I skipped right to them. But the four seed down. So it could be Washington, could be Tampa, could be the Rams, or could be the Bears. I know, as a Packers fan, I'm really hoping it's not the Buccaneers, but I feel as if that's the likeliest scenario. Saints and Seahawks both win. That means it's the lowest seed there, which, you know, if Tampa's the only underdog winning, they'll be the lowest seed. Really, what changes it is, again, if either the Rams or Bears can get a win, suddenly it's that team that the Packers are playing next week. So we'll next week we'll know who the Packers are playing, so we can properly preview it. But I suspect it'll be Tampa. Of course, we've seen that this year. I think it's the one game Packers fans probably want to forget more than all of them. Although, you know, if you really hate the Vikings enough, you may want to just forget the one that we lost to the Vikings and allowed Dalvin Cook to run all over the place. But yeah, this is I am nervous, especially without David Bakhtiari. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would be quite a tough task. So again, we'll get to that next week in due time. Really appreciate you coming on, Nick. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you again, Kyle, very much for having me. I had a lot of fun, and I really hope we can do this again.
And of course, I'd like to thank all of our listeners for listening to us here on the Full Press Packers Pod.